Welcome to The Workplace, a podcast by Cal Chamber. I'm Erica Frank, Cal Chamber's Executive Vice President and General Counsel. And today I have Jennifer Shaw of the Shaw Law Group to join us in our continuing coverage of the COVID-19 virus and its impact on the workplace. And today we want to talk a little bit more about the layoffs and reduction in force that has been taking place not only throughout the state of California, but as a nation as a whole. And for those of us that are Californians and have been doing business in California, we know that there are always some additional wrinkles that we need to be concerned about that may not be impacting the rest of the nation. So Jennifer, welcome.
Hi, great to be here, Erica. Thank you so much.
You are so welcome. And of course, we're talking over the phone again, which is always so tricky because it's so much fun to see you.
It's bittersweet, I have to say. It's bittersweet.
So, Jennifer, we've talked before, and I know that this issue about layoffs is nothing new to folks, especially over the last 3-4 weeks now. But we know that employers are continuing to struggle with layoffs and reduction in force. And, you know, just top of mind, how has the COVID-19 pandemic really shaped employers' decisions as it relates to laying employees off and reductions in force?
Well, here's the deal. The first thing, I think we need to think about is what do we mean by furlough and what do we mean by reduction in force? Because one of the things that the pandemic has really made clear is nobody knows how long this is going to go. So if you think back to the 2008 economic crisis, our recession or depression or whatever you want to call it, we had people who were looking out 18 months and saying, look, I've got to downsize. I've got to restructure. I'm going to do some layoffs. I am eliminating jobs. We call those reductions in force, right? For the foreseeable future, we are not going to need you. And foreseeable future meaning, you know, out as far as 18 months. With the pandemic, we've sort of been going along and trying to figure out what's happening day to day, right? So one day it looks like we might have our apex cases in California in mid-May, then mid-June. Now we're saying 2 weeks from now, so who knows? So one of the things that's really, I think, caused a lot of consternation for employers is, look, what if I only want to leave them off work for a couple of weeks? Do I call that a furlough? Do I call that a reduction in force? So we'll get into those issues in a minute, but that's really been the biggest difference, I think, with the pandemic is trying to figure out, okay, how long do I need this to go on for?
Jennifer, the other thing that really caught my attention with the pandemic as opposed to how things transpired in 2008 with the recession is the jarring effect that the pandemic had when cases started to show up in the United States. With the recession,
yes,
it felt like this gradual downturn,
right,
so to
That's
speak,
right,
where, you know, employers had time to think. Here, it felt like as soon as those shelter-in-place orders were being issued, and in California, we know it started at the local level, it was the domino effect where all of a sudden, abruptly, things are shutting down, and as abruptly as they were shutting down, individuals were getting laid off.
That's exactly right. And that's part of what I'm saying about things changing every single day because,
right,
you know, my mother was in Italy and I thought, okay, and this was the beginning of March. And I thought, okay, I need to get her home. Well, I got her home in the nick of time. Pretty soon, you know, all of Italy is crashing. You can't get any flights home. These are not things that we predicted. And I think it's really important to think about the way this has come on us. In some ways, I feel like we've been in this crisis for a year already, right? There's just been so much that has happened. And employers are trying to figure that out.
It sure feels like that. It really does. It's a surreal time right now. It adds another layer to employers' decision-making. So, Jen, in addition to once we started to see all the layoffs happening, and employers making those decisions, in came the government to assist, not only with unemployment benefits for those employees, but also we have the CARES Act, which includes the Paycheck Protection Program. And now this adds another layer of issues that employers need to consider. What types of questions have you been receiving from your clients?
Well, one of the main questions, Erica, is did I make a mistake in laying people off or putting mm-hmm. them on furlough? Will I still be mm-hmm. able to take advantage of the Paycheck Protection Program if I did that? And honestly, it's part of what you mentioned earlier about this idea of we're all moving so quickly and we can't anticipate what else is on the horizon. People felt like, oh my gosh, I better lay people off because I don't know what to do. And then a week later, we get the Paycheck Protection Program. But now, of course, if you've applied for that loan, you know that nobody knows what they're doing. Nobody knows how to process it. Nobody understands what's going on. So it doesn't really seem like it's going to be this big help that we all thought, at least not in the short term.
Yeah, and it feels like there's a lot of unpredictability, which we know business owners, they need predictability to be able to make those important decisions so that they can keep the lights on and the services continuing to be provided. So I can certainly see how this is such a trying time, which gets back to that underlining question that so many employers are having to weigh. And as you pointed out, the reduction in force, the layoff, or the furloughs. So realizing here that the landscape that we are dealing with right now with the COVID-19 is so different from the recession, to the extent that it is, yes, a rapidly changing event that has required life as we knew it to come to a complete halt and change course in a matter of hours, it feels like. Once that decision is made, Jennifer, procedurally, is there much difference between how employers conduct layoffs today as opposed to the calculations they were making in 2008? And when I talk about procedurally, what are some of the laws and check the box type items that employers need to be mindful to follow?
Well, one of the most important things, I think, is there are a lot of employers who are wanting to put employees just on a short-term layoff, mm-hmm. and they're using the term furlough. What they don't realize, many of them, is that the California Division of Labor Standards Enforcement, the labor commissioner, takes the position that if you put someone on a temporary furlough and you don't bring them back in the same pay period, you owe them their accrued vacation. You have, in essence, separated their employment. So mm-hmm. one of the reasons people have chosen furloughs is because they thought if they didn't actually separate, they didn't actually lay off the employee, they wouldn't have that vacation or PTO that they had to pay out. But that's not really the case. The term furlough really comes from the Fair Labor Standards Act and its applicability to public sector employees. So it came up a lot in the 2008 recession, particularly in Sacramento, when a lot of these state agencies were furloughing their employees. But there's actually provisions in the Federal Fair Labor Standards Act to provide for those furloughs. What we're really doing in California right now, in light of the labor commissioner's guidance, is we're either doing a reduction in force, where we're eliminating mm-hmm. someone's job entirely, or we're doing a layoff or a temporary layoff where we still have an issue with paying out the vacation or the PTO. That doesn't mean you have to end their employment, but you do at least have to ask them, hey, do you want your vacation or your PTO? So that's one procedural issue. Another issue are the WARN Acts. See, there's the Federal WARN Act. There's California's WARN Act, which some people call the baby WARN. Essentially, these laws tell employers, if you're going to do a mass layoff or you're going to close your facility, you need to give everybody 60 days notice, which means your employees, government officials in the Employment Development Department, on certain commissions, in certain organizations, so we can prepare to have all these people hitting the unemployment line. Of course, when you have a crisis like COVID, you can't give 60 days notice. So Governor Newsom did give employers a respite and say, look, I'm not going to enforce the 60-day notice part of CalWARN, but you still have to give notice when you can. And not only that, you have to include very specific language in your CalWARN notice. And under federal law, a temporary layoff is not a WARN event. So you might not have to give the notice if you're not in California. But California courts have recognized that a temporary layoff is subject to WARN. So I know this sounds very complex, but the point is there are very specific hoops you need to jump through if you're going to avoid liability. Because don't forget, plaintiff's lawyers still need to eat, right? Cases might not be able to be filed right now, But people are going to be looking for where employers have screwed this up. And I think while we're in this feeling of, oh my gosh, we're all in this together and we love each other and we want it to all be great and we want to all get out of this on the other side, that's wonderful. But when this is all over, there are going to be lawsuits. And so employers right now must be very, very careful how they handle each of these aspects of whether they're doing a layoff or reduction in force or paying someone not to do work, you know, whatever it is they decide to do.
And Jen, we know that with the California WARN Act, there was some reprieve that the governor was able to issue through executive order as far as eliminating that 60-day time period, but still requiring a notice.
That's right. And like I said a moment ago, the notice has to have very specific information in it. So you can't just use a WARN Act notice that you've used in the past.
Okay, so let's talk about a very common issue and topic that employers grapple with all the time, even when it's summer and everyone's able to be enjoying backyard parties with each other. And that's the final paycheck rules that are triggered when there is a termination, regardless of whether you want to call the termination a reduction in force or a layoff. And maybe you could touch upon some of those paycheck issues and how the current environment with all of these employees working remotely or not reporting to a brick and mortar workplace, how this is impacting employers' ability to comply with those final paycheck rules.
Well, that's a great question. And of course, the problem is you can't give a paycheck to somebody who's not there. There are provisions that allow for direct deposit if somebody has already elected direct deposit. But honestly, what's happening is employers are ending up paying waiting time penalties, that one day of wages for every day the paycheck is going to be late. And we tell employers to pay them up front, Erica, because otherwise what happens is the employee will wait for 30 days to go by, which is the maximum number of days of penalties, and then ask for the money. Well, at that point, you're done, right? Because you didn't comply with the rule necessarily. Hopefully, the legislature will be able to give us some relief in this area. I'm hoping, I know that there are some efforts being made there. But right now, this final paycheck rule is really a problem.
Any tips that you can offer, and you know, in addition to that, paying the waiting time penalty, sending the check, messenger, pigeon, FedEx, UPS, is there any guidance on that that you can offer?
Well, I'm telling people it's worth it to go take the check to the person's house. You know, if you, and obviously this doesn't work if your checks are cut in, you know, Tennessee, but if you have the ability, then you just go deliver the separation package with the final check, with everything so that it's there. That's one thing you can do. You can send it FedEx. You can also send it the day before. I know that's weird, but you say your termination date is tomorrow. I mean, what people don't understand is you get to pick the termination date. So why not say your termination date is Friday and then you mail it on Wednesday?
Yeah, you get to pick the termination date so long as that final paycheck arrives on their last day.
By that date, exactly.
Got it. What about, you know, I know that this is, again, whether we're at a backyard party or in home isolation because of COVID, if we're using FedEx or UPS, I know a common question is, should we have a receipt signed, someone sign attesting to receiving the package? What are your thoughts on that?
Actually, yeah, it's a great question, Erica. I actually think it's a bad idea, and let me tell you why. Because the person says, I ain't going to sign it. Okay. If you do it by Federal Express or by UPS or overnight USPS, you already know the driver delivered it. So you don't need someone to sign it. And for heaven's sake, don't send it certified mail or it sits at the post office and they never sign for it. So I think it's better to just send it overnight mail, pay your $9.95 or whatever you have to pay. Or even if you know it's local, you could even not do that. And you can say, I mailed it. Like, you know, here I took a picture of it with today's, you know, stamp that I ran through the machine or whatever, and we're done. So there are a lot of different ways to do it, but I think employers have to get off of automatic sort of pilot and really be thinking about, hey, wait a second, what's going on?
very helpful. Definitely the time, it's the time to think a little bit outside the box. And I like your suggestion of taking a photo of the date, stamp, yes. time, letter. I mean, gosh, everyone takes photos of everything else. You might as well use it to your advantage to offer that evidence and proof of when it was sent. That's fantastic. Well, Jennifer, to close off this podcast, because I think it would be helpful just to bring a little bit of brightness to the subject, what about bringing people back? I think that some of the reason why a lot of employers were choosing to quote-unquote furlough was the notion that when I get to open, I need my employees. I need them to come back, and sort of this feeling that they have some power over the employee to get them to come back. Can't they just rehire for those that they've potentially laid off in that situation?
Well, sure, they can rehire them, but you say it like it's an easy thing to do, right? Can't they just rehire? This means, you know, maybe new I-9, you're going to reinstate the California paid sick leave balance. If it's been less than a year, you've got to get them to sign all the new paperwork, the acknowledgement of the handbook, the confidentiality and proprietary information agreement, the non-disclosure agreement, whatever it is you have. So yes, they can certainly hire them back, presuming they didn't take a job somewhere else. I mean, this is the thing. A lot of us spend so much time and energy training and coaching and mentoring our team. We'd like to think they'll come back immediately, but sometimes they got a better offer. Sometimes they're upset that you laid them off in the first place. So mm-hmm. I don't think people can assume that they're just going to come back.
It's a very good point, and why we go back to where we started from today. Tough decisions, but I think that it's great that we collectively can offer some tips to those employers, some nuggets that they can take away so that they can make the best of this difficult situation. So Jennifer, as always, thank you so much for being on our podcast today.
Oh, thank you for having me, Eric. It's always a pleasure.
And thank you to our listeners for tuning back into the workplace. We hope that this information that we've been providing you is helpful during this trying time. Please comment, share, and subscribe to Cal Chambers Podcast by visiting calchamber.com.